another episode of Transcontinental Overload. I'm Stephanie, your host, recording this in Austin, Texas, which probably isn't the most amazing place to be right now. For one, our COVID-19 cases are going up, up, up. So it's only really kicking off now. Texas is one of those states that opened up pretty early, way too early, I think, and people just got the wrong message and were way less careful than they should have been. So it's pretty scary. And then, of course, there's the news, and I don't have to say too much about that because we've all been absolutely shaken and horrified by what's been going on. All that violence, police brutality, and the complete and utter mess that is our administration. And mess doesn't even come close. Yeah, it's all pretty horrible. And it really shows very clearly that we need change. And there is a lot of energy in the air. I really feel like people are so angry and galvanized now that change is actually possible. There is that energy. So let's keep it going. And of course, the best way to get things to change is to vote. So anybody who can vote, please go to the polls. So if you are an expat like myself and you can't vote because you're not a citizen, then there are so many other ways of supporting this and facilitating this. Make sure people just help those organizations that get people to the polls, and I'm going to direct all my energy towards that so we can get as many people voting as possible. Let's focus on that and let's keep the momentum going. Okay, talking about positive energy, on to today's episode. Recording today's episode was a real treat for me. My guest is the lovely Maija Ladismäki, originally from Finland, who moved to Silicon Valley 8.5 years ago with her husband and 4 children. They're all teenagers now, so Maija and I had a lot to talk about. We actually know each other. We used to work together when I lived in California, and we've stayed connected through social media, but I hadn't seen her in person for over 4 years. And so it was really nice getting to spend some time talking to her and comparing notes on life in the US, and in particular Silicon Valley. Maija and I met while we were both volunteering for a local art docent program, training to be art teachers for the elementary schools in our district. So that meant teaching art to children from about 5 to 12 years of age. California is woefully underfunded when it comes to art, music, and things like that, and relies heavily on parent support. It's really crazy when you think about Silicon Valley and all the creativity and innovation that comes from that place, and yet the schools are so lacking in funds for fostering creativity and creative pursuits. I absolutely adored being part of that program, as it helped me make friends with like-minded people and was just such a good way to feel integrated into the local community. And of course, that's one of the things we talk about. We also talk about art, which is one of my absolute favorite subjects. Maija is an artist herself. She's a passionate photographer, a foodie, and a very gifted ceramicist. And her Instagram and her website, www.onblueplate.com, are an absolute feast for the eyes. All the links, as ever, are in the show notes. She states on her website, "I'm an artist inspired by nature, music, my state of mind, and memories. The outcome is reflected in my ceramics, food, and photography." Let's hear Maija's story. Maija, I'm so happy to have you here today. It's so good to see you, even though the listeners can't see you, but I can. And it's lovely to get to spend some time with you.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm really happy that you asked me to do it. And this is my very first podcast that I'm ever doing with anybody.
Woo-hoo! So
I'm terrified and excited, obviously.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time. So I would love to talk to you about your art, because, yeah, I mean, that's basically what kept me kind of in touch with you. I've been following you the last few years that we haven't actually physically seen each other following you on your Instagram, and then more recently your website. Yes. And it's so lovely. I've always loved your photography, and you have such a special way to present especially food and ceramics, but also nature in a very special way. And the way you talk about the colors, and yeah, there's so much passion comes from that. And it's been great to follow your journey from presenting those passion projects and to actually setting up a business and your website. So yeah. I was so happy to see that. And I really want to hear all about that. But before we talk about your website and that background and your art, let's hear a little bit more about you and find out where you're from and how you ended up in California.
All right. We've been out here for, this is our 9th year. So I come from Finland and studied to become a teacher, met my future husband there. I thought for a few years, he never did, and we had kids. He started his own business at the same time. So kind of, it was his child, and then I had our four with me. And it was a mutual agreement, really. I didn't have to do it, so I decided to take care of our kids and not to teach. And he worked 24/7, but it really was like a choice that we both made and both were happy. So already back in Finland, I was that weirdo who stayed home with kids and didn't want to work.
Four of them, they, I would think, keep you very busy.
They did. But I think still in Finland, I always felt a little bit like people started at the streets when I'm going back and kind of what's wrong with you because you don't want to go to teach. But I think it was just for the sanity of the family. I also have a tendency that I want to, whatever I do, I want to do it fully. And I felt like I have to take care of these kids more than go to teach other people's kids. But of course I planned to go back, but then that was exactly the time. So our youngest one was a year when my husband introduced this idea that, because he was running a design digital service agency. So his dream was to come to California.
Oh, yes.
He introduced the idea. I said, yeah, why not? Sounds fantastic. And then he traveled here for a year and a half, like spending 2 weeks in Finland, 2 weeks here in Silicon Valley, testing the water, seeing if the business would work. Because it didn't make any sense to bring the whole family here and start testing. And he did that, and then he said, around the time that our youngest one was 3, he said, yeah, he thinks it might work. And so we started to put everything together. And because it was a small company with no like experience about how to do this, we had to kind of do everything by ourselves. And that's why kind of a lot of hassle. We kind of pioneers in the company to do it, and
I know the feeling.
Yeah. Mm. Then we finally moved here in December 2011, and and now it's time flies. I can't believe it's been 9 years.
So did you think you were going to be there that long, or did you have in your mind did you think you were going to move back to Finland at some point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we didn't think about it at all. So we didn't have a contract of 2 years like some expats had, because he was running his own business. And I think first it was like, let's see, 6 months if you have to go back. And then, but kind of, I think maybe the mental mindset was about 2 years and then we'll consider again. And after 2 years, everything was going very well in his business, and the kids of course had settled nicely.
Yeah.
So it was again like without really thinking about we continued. And I guess it came later, like maybe a couple of years ago, I really started thinking that okay, now it's been a while, and if we ever want to do a move back or move somewhere else, we have to maybe start thinking about it.
Yeah.
We're still thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think once you've done that, once you've left your home country and you've moved somewhere else, you always know that you can do that. And I think that curiosity, if you have that natural curiosity about another country and what it's like to live somewhere else, then it's always at the back of your mind.
Yes.
And because I feel that even now, I've been in the States a while now, and moved back to England and then back here. And I'm still thinking, who knows? Who knows what's next?
Yeah, I definitely think first after you did it once, it's easier to do it again. You kind of have done it, so you know it works.
So all your family, both your and your husband's families, they're all in Finland?
Everybody else is in Finland, and especially now during this pandemic and not being able to travel, it's hard.
This summer, I think, is very hard for all of us. It's the same here. We're used to the last 10 years, we've always spent the summer in Europe. And that was kind of the highlight of the year in some ways, because it's that, you know, you could just go back to somewhere, you know, and, you know, you get to spend quality time with everyone and you don't normally see them. And so I think it's hitting us pretty hard that we can't do that this summer. Yeah. So usually you go back and your kids do too.
Yeah, in the beginning we didn't go every year actually. I think it's because we didn't have direct flights, and I guess we also, because we didn't know how long we would stay, we wanted to explore this country. I would say kind of, I regret it a little bit. I think we should have gone every year, thinking of to keep the connection stronger. I mean, my kids do have strong connections to their grandparents and close relatives, but they kind of lost many connections to friends. And I think also now that I realize that I should have kept more, I should have been stricter with the language. I think it would have helped, because every time we go, it's like a language school for them. Because first of all, there are relatives who don't speak English at all. They have to the effort. And so
that's one of those things, the language is always an issue. And we have even for my kids, they have British English and American English are different. So for them, it's like a foreign language, and they actually switch when they are in the UK, they sound different. but then they also have German to contend with, and they're both very different in their how they speak it and how much they want to speak it. And so it's very interesting. And do you feel the same? Do you feel like you have four, so there's four different characters and probably four also different ages when they left Finland. So I guess that has quite an effect on language learning. Have you always spoken Finnish?
Yes. Well, I think my husband is better. He's really good at speaking only Finnish. I really try to do it, but I have to admit that sometimes when they start speaking about school in English, I might slip into that too, and I hate it. Yep. And I it's nice that at least my husband sometimes points it out, so I try to be better. But I do that. But unfortunately, the kids really speak more and more English. I mean, when they talk to themselves, they speak mostly in English.
Yeah, but that makes sense. I think. I mean, that makes total sense, because they've spent probably some of them more than half of their lives in the US, and I think it's just their natural. That's how they feel relaxed, because the other language is a language they speak with their grandparents, maybe, and then it's really tricky. And I've noticed this. Well, last summer we were in Germany, and my older one was like, you know what, I need some German friends here. She was like almost 17 at that point, and she's like, I don't want to just hang out with grandma and granddad all the time, and I want to find some friends. And we went to this festival, very small village festival, and she just took off, and she saw someone wearing a band t-shirt, and she's like, oh, I like that band, and off she went. And I was amazed, and she basically just walked over and started chatting to them. And then she spent the rest of our time there going, and it's like hanging out with them, and she came back with all this, like this German that was new to me, because it's like the young people's German. It's so funny. And so she picked up all these expressions that she couldn't have learned from me, And yeah, that was very cool. But that's her personality too. I would never, ever have done that to myself. I'm way too much of an introvert to do anything like that.
Yeah, we put also our two oldest ones, they already went to a summer kind of camp in Finland, which is traditional when you do it mm-hmm. when you're 15. And so our son was supposed to do it this summer, mm-hmm. but it's canceled. I mean, they might have it, but we can't go. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's very important because they pick up that language that's not, that's relevant to them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but like you said, it's very, how they pick up the new language is really so much about the personality, how they start speaking it, for example. Our oldest one started to speak it mm-hmm. immediately without, I mean, she knew a few words and she spoke Finglish even with her friends. She didn't mind, she had to like speak. And then again, our second one, who is more quiet anyway, so she really waited like 6 months before really speaking. She wanted it to be better. And then there is variations between those mm-hmm. two.
It's so fascinating. I just love watching it. And I always think, even, you know, the times when they just won't speak the other language and they'll only speak English, and it's still, you know, it's still there somewhere. And they might pick up that on that connection when they're older and kind of go back to it. And I think it's somewhere, it's lodged in their brain, and I think they can go back to it. But also they might not, because they might just decide that they're just American now, and they don't, it doesn't, it's not part of who they are. So it's a hard one, I think, for us as parents to let go of that and to say, okay, they're their own person. They will figure it out, and you can't be too, because I have those moments too where it's like, oh, I should have done this. I should have been stricter, or I should have insisted. And then, but that was never my kind of approach anyway.
Oh, I agree. I think also like trying to forcefully keep a language perfect in academic level is not worth it anymore, especially because the world is changing. Like soon we probably, every one of us have something in our brain that gives the, you have to know languages, but what we still, I think, why learning more than one language is good for you is for your brain development and for your activity. So it's good.
Absolutely.
Because, for example, I mean, knowing Finnish language, that there are 5 million people who speak it, is not really a really great asset to have in terms of how I'm going to use it. But the fact that your brain is working around two languages.
Mm-hmm. It's your brain is wired differently. And I think it's just that whole awareness that there is something other than English.
Yeah.
That's why I always feel like native speakers kind of miss out on that a little bit, because, I mean, I don't know.
I don't want my kid, because sometimes you hear 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds, that's with the time when they realize that they are kind of disappointed their parents didn't keep it.
Yeah.
And that's what I always, the older ones, if I have to remind them, I usually say that. I just don't want you to regret. I think you won't regret that you know it Finnish, but you would regret that you didn't. Mm-hmm.
So when you first moved to California, I mean, obviously, you know, everyone thinks they know what California is all about, you know, from the movies. And I don't know, what kind of things did you expect to find? And then what surprised you? What did you not expect?
Yeah, well, it's funny, even though it's been 9 years, I still remember quite well when we arrived. It was a big move, of course. And I think for me, one of the things that I didn't expect was that I learned to love California so fast, because I'm a person who attaches to places. So I have to say it was hard for me to live in Finland, but maybe also I'm more about the person who, once I get over the separation anxiety, I'm like eyes open and everything. And so I think adjusting to me was really fast. And even when our container arrived 9 weeks later and we had living with the very minimal furniture and stuff, I was like, what, do we need that stuff at all? Actually, I was already liking it so much. But of course, later on, I'm really happy we have the antique furniture from Scandinavia and all the family artifacts. I'm super grateful that they did it. But I think that was, I didn't expect me to adjust easily, but I think what really helped was people were here so welcoming and helpful. I think people here especially, they just used to people coming and going, which is also downsides, but they made you feel very welcomed at school. They had these programs for kids and everything. And I think especially in Finland, we are very different. People kind of survive on their own as long as possible. We even have a saying, I don't know how it translates to English, but it's more something like, don't bother to help me, I'm fine. So I think the fact that people were offering help without me asking, and but I also noticed that for me it was quite easy to accept the help, and I started to like it a lot. What I didn't expect also, even though I knew it, was how much I was supposed to and expected to be involved in kids' schools. I think the amount was just something I didn't plan to have. I, of course, having my background as a teacher and having multiple kids, I liked it. It was not a problem, but still maybe realizing how much and the school system here relies on parents too. It was also so fun.
Yeah. Volunteering, I think in general, is a big, much bigger thing in this country on every level. And I had that same experience. And when I look back on the things, my first blog posts I wrote, they were so like, oh my God, everyone is just so, you know, fussing about school all the time and you have to do blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of complaining because I just wasn't used to it. And then when I started volunteering myself, I saw the benefits, and it just, it was like such an eye opener.
Really get to know the kids' friends. I liked it. And also you kind of, it's part of becoming a member of the community. And I think we came here at the time when some of the things that I think really got a little crazy, like parents doing the kids' work because they knew projects. I think that shifted back to the kids, which is also a big,
Thank goodness. Yeah.
And then I think I thought I was prepared to help my kids to get adjusted, because for me, I was planning to stay at home, at least in the beginning, to help them. And my husband was again working a lot. So I think I only realized a few years later, and actually even this past fall, when my oldest one was doing her college essays, and she wrote about the experience about becoming here. And I have to say that I wasn't fully mindful about how, for a 10-year-old, it was kind of a big change. And especially because she's so vocal and she was a kind of a leader in her social group in Finland, and she was tall and everything. And then she came here and she became the shy girl who didn't have language and who didn't know anybody. And she had to kind of almost like recreate her identity. And she wrote about it in her essay. And I realized that, oh, it wasn't maybe as easy as it looked outside.
Yeah.
That's, I think, for some people, if they plan to go, it's good to check every now and then how they really are doing.
And I think, I mean, I feel like this is changing a little bit now because there's more information about the transitions that children go through. But I mean, same experience with us. And you on the surface, especially if you have a child who's usually very smiley and outgoing, and you think, oh, they're absolutely fine, they will cope, they'll be okay, the grades might be good, and you think everything's fine, and deep down, it's not really, because they don't know how to actually, because they're like were someone before, and now they don't, they might not even have the words to say, hey, I'm not okay. I think it's amazing to be able to voice it, even when it's, you know, a few years later. So
I think so too. I mean, it's maybe one of the things that made her stronger eventually.
Oh, for sure.
Being more mindful at the moment when it's happening would have even helped her more. Or who knows, maybe it's went the way it was supposed to.
I have to say, I think knowing what I know now, about the whole process, I would have done a lot of things differently. But so now that's why it's kind of part of the reason why I'm doing this, by talking to people and hearing people's experiences and the things they've learned along the way, and you know, the advice they have for people doing this. And I think it's great if you can hear it, maybe rather than read it in a book somewhere, but actually hear people's real stories and then think, oh, that's interesting, I would have never thought of that. So yeah, that's part of my motivation. So
yeah, that's really good. And I agree. I mean, there are things that you kind of can read from the, even back in then, 9 years ago, you could read about the how much there's more paperwork. Well, that still surprised me a little bit, and all the bureaucracy. But I think it's more about the mental things that, and those things that you can't really read anywhere. You have to hear it from peers.
I agree. Silicon Valley is a good place for that in some ways, because people are so, like you said before, so used to people coming from different countries and settling there, and they're used to it. The people in schools are used to it too, and that's a huge advantage. And also, you can pretty much guaranteed find a group there of people from your home country. And sometimes it's a good thing, and sometimes it's like, yeah, I don't want to get too integrated into that. But sometimes it's just really useful to have people who have come from the same background, and they have some advice, and that's nice. That's kind of it's very reassuring. But that's, I think, unique about Silicon Valley.
Yeah, but for sure that's really nice, because you can also choose how much you get involved with that group.
Absolutely.
And but I really, I'm grateful for our group of, we have all kinds of groups for kids and for women and business people. And it's sometimes the fastest resource when you want to know where you can buy that special thing for a Finnish dish, for example.
Yeah. What would you say? Have you adopted some of the like Californian, American things into your lifestyle more now? Because I mean, your children probably feel more American than they do Finnish.
Yeah.
And what would you say you've kind of, because obviously we all blend our cultures to some extent, and then are there some things that you've adopted and you just think you can never live without now?
Yeah, that's a nice question. I think there are many. I think I know a little bit of small talk now. I'm not the natives are, but since we don't have any in Finland, I for sure have learned to add my how are yous, and I like it, and I think it's more, I start to speak to strangers, and it already has happened for the past 5 years at least. So that was one habit. And yes, for sure, kids are, I would say, Californian. And they have their, I would say, the social cues they get when and connecting with people are more Californian than Finnish. We had a funny coincidence. I think it was the first or second time we went back to Finland, and we stayed the first couple of nights in a hotel, and the kids were really, like, they were actually almost in tears in the morning when they said, no one is greeting us or smiling at us, and they are not saying that we are cute. So what's wrong? Like, what's wrong with them? They were asking. And I said, well, it's nothing wrong with you. This is a different...
Oh, culture shock. Culture shock on a kid level.
Yeah. Finnish people don't do small talk. And so they adapted to that very fast because they didn't have so much of experience of not having it.
Yeah.
And I think really here people are like socialized more. They have parties. And I guess also because many people don't have relatives and extended families, they kind of create them with friends.
Yeah.
Getting togethers are more casual and more, they happen, like you don't have to really plan that so much.
You know, that's a really good point. People have to create their network because family is thousands of miles away.
Yeah. I always thought it's a lot about the weather too, that in Finland people are more isolated. But I guess it's also about that you don't, you have to create your network.
So do you have any advice that you'd give someone moving countries? Maybe, I mean, obviously, specifically California, probably, but what do you think is important?
Well, I think once you make the decision that you are going, you just move forward. And I think being like really open-minded, really open to new and kind of also maybe a little bit challenging situations. But being curious, yeah, and asking questions, mm-hmm. and even attending events that you are maybe super excited about, but you might meet someone that mm-hmm. can become your lifelong friend, or at least a friend for a shorter time. So I think it's really important to be active.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's easier if you have kids, because you are connected to school. Even if you don't want to, you are. And but maybe even applying a new hobby or something, if you don't have otherwise connected, or volunteering, it's a great mm-hmm. opportunity to. So being active. But I, like we mentioned, the group of your own nationality, I think it's good to have connection to that too, because especially if challenging times arrive, it's sometimes very helpful to have your own people, like with the same mm-hmm. language, the same background. And
mm-hmm.
and I think, like I mentioned, I think keeping strong connections to your home country too is really important, because it's, you might not as an adult miss them so much in the beginning, at least you maybe miss people, but you don't miss the traditions mm-hmm. maybe super much. You don't miss the festivities, because you get so much new things here. But I think keeping up with them is important, because your kids need those roots. They will ask them later for sure, and they are happy. And kind of when they grow up a little older, they are almost proud of them, that we have these weird things. You know, they tell their friends and video days, isn't that crazy?
Can you think of something that you or your kids do?
I'm kind of a crazy thing. It's not really. It's like comparing our Independence Days. I think
mm-hmm.
in the beginning, my kids were like, why do we celebrate this Finnish Independence Day? Because it's so sad and so serious. And we are lighting candles. But it's also because our independence is so young. But mm-hmm. Of course, 4th of July was like crazy celebration in China.
Yeah.
But I think later on they realize it's different, and there's a reason why it's different, and they are kind of now proud of that
yeah.
we operate very differently. And some of our dishes are, I don't know, I think they are kind of very, I don't know what's the word, they're not very popular, but they have become like proud of them too, like sharing. Like spinach pancakes can become really interesting
yeah.
things.
So that way, that's pretty much, I like to ask this at the end of the interview, but actually while we're talking about this, yeah, what are some dishes that you make when you want to maintain that connection or show your kids that this is another
yeah.
way of doing this? I mean, I know because of, from your Instagram account and your photography, your food photography, I know there are probably hundreds of dishes that
yeah.
you make, but is there a specific one that you make for yourself because you love
yeah.
it?
Yeah, that's a nice question too. I really, yeah, I'm into cooking and baking a lot. And I think coming here, it's been really nice to combine kind of the Scandinavian Nordic cuisine with the fresh, local, mm-hmm. sustainable produce that we get here year-long. That's mm-hmm. something I'm going to miss.
Oh, the farmers markets, yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so we have this one dish, it's called Karelian pies, and it comes kind of more from the, because Karelia is in the east part of Finland and connected to Russia, but it's, those pies are baked everywhere in Finland, but that's where they come from. And it's kind of, it's a ripe pie filled with rice porridge. It sounds like super weird. and we eat it with egg butter. So we mix cooked, boiled eggs with butter. But it's just
Oh,
really
sounds
rich.
Good. That sounds good.
We put some salmon too. So salmon is a big thing. Salmon soup is something mm-hmm. I make. Well, those are the things probably. that come to my mind.
It's those little things. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your art. So I mentioned your Instagram account and your photography. And I remember from our art docent days that you always were into ceramics and clay and loved working with clay. I do remember that. So I was so happy when I saw that you set up your website, www.onblueplate.com.
Yes.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
I only published it, was it beginning of this year, I think? And I think the whole kind of being an artist that I'm now comfortable saying it, it would have probably have happened in Finland. So that's one thing I think is different here for me. I think this area, not maybe this country, but this area feels like full of opportunities and possibilities, and you can always try, and you can maybe be not so successful, but you can try again, and you get the support, and you just feel like almost that everything is. Oh, and also you don't have to be just like a one kind of a person. You don't have to fully focus on one thing and be great at it. You can hassle a lot of things. That's, I think, was for me really relieving coming here, because I have always been doing many things, and I always felt like what the heck is my focus. And I have to find it, and I have to know what it is, because otherwise I don't know what to do. And here I realized, well, I don't really have to maybe choose. I can do many things, and some of them maybe work, some of them maybe don't. Maybe I can combine. And also that I think always trying to do something might lead to another thing if mm-hmm. that specific thing doesn't work. So even in Finland, when I stayed at home with kids, I did all kinds of art, and I started ceramics when my second child was 2 and she's now 17. So 15 years I've been doing, and I had a little bit of that already when I started to become a teacher. I specialized in art and I did clay. I have to say at that time I found it really challenging because of this 3D scale, and I feel that I'm not good at that, and it's hard for me. And so maybe that's why I picked it up 15 years ago, thinking, okay, I'm gonna challenge myself and not do what I really feel I'm good at. And I immediately fell in love when I finally like put my hands into that clay. I think from a couple of first years it was also mostly therapeutic, just mm-hmm. to wedge the clay and feel it and do, and because it takes, I think because it's so kinetic, is that the word? Like it takes your many senses, it kind of me forget things at home for a while, and I created my own space.
I love how you say on your website, it's like when you go on the website, the first thing that you see is the hand is the window to the mind. And I love that. That is such a strong visual, I feel like. It's really kind of, because it means it's not something that you mechanically do, but it's actually something that comes out of you, and your hands help make it happen. So I love that.
I think it really is, because I quite often don't really even, sometimes I can't, sometimes I sketch more, sometimes I just can't sketch anything, but once I go there and touch the clay, it starts to happen. And that's why I think clay for me is really the best material. And then when we moved here, I had been doing hand building only in Finland. I was terrified about the wheel. And of course, it's very typical in Finland. The teacher told me that, if you want to really like be good at wheel throwing, you have to do it 2 years every day, like 4 hours per day. And of course, I felt that that was too big an obstacle. I can never do that, you know. And here, I was kind of forced to take the wheel throwing class, because that was the only class that I could find near our house at the evening time when I could leave the house. Husband was home. And so I thought, okay, I'm just going to do it now. And the first class, first 10 sessions, I was thinking about my teacher back in Finland, thinking, oh my gosh, she's right. This is not going to happen. this is too hard. I'm just like never gonna. I was still afraid of the wheel, I think. And once I got over that idea that not every single creation has to be perfect.
Yeah.
When I was able to smash my first thing and like put it back to a bunch of clay and start all over, that was the beginning of everything. Because I didn't have to produce every time. I could just play with it. And I took a couple of other classes, but I quite often started to do open studio hours. And that was also relieving. Once I had the kind of a membership and I could go whenever it mm-hmm. was optimal for me, I started going more, and the kids got older and they had more hours at school, which helped a lot too. And then I did a lot of online YouTube videos and read books, but really just through a lot. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. But I think everything started to, like, now what I mostly do is like I combine hand building and wheel drawing. That's what mm-hmm. I like most. I start with wheel drawing, but then I make different parts, for example, and then I put them together.
Yeah.
And
what's your favorite piece that you've made? Because I mean, looking at the website, it's a very unique style, and I mean, they're beautiful. And we haven't even talked about the colors yet, but what would you say is your favorite piece and why?
That's a tricky question. I don't know, but there are many dimensions that affect that. I think one of the things that I really like is a big plate where I painted our memory from last summer in Bangkok. But I think some of the vases where I have either got inspired by a tree or a bird, that's mm-hmm. honest to me. I like those too. Mm-hmm. I like to do cups, like more functional pieces. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed that it's once you make 12 cups or mugs the same, you kind of feel like itchy already. Like, okay, let's do it. I at least have to change the handle a little bit different. It's like, I guess the repetition, the repetition is really like the kind of the proof that you can do it and you are resilient. And I agree, partly.
On your website, it says, so your art is your ceramics, mm. created in Northern California with a Scandinavian aesthetic. Mm-hmm. So where does that come in? And do you feel like you can, when you make something, that you bring in your roots? In some ways, do you feel like your art is something that you can bring the two sides of you together? Is that something that happens, or am I just interpreting this?
No, I think it really happens. Maybe I haven't been thinking about it so much, but I think you're right, and for sure. Well, many people, when they think about Scandinavian aesthetics, it's really minimalistic and kind of quiet and simple and not so many colors, and so I think I have part of that. So sometimes my works, I don't even glaze them; they become. So sometimes I just leave them like the clay is already black; it's colored, so I leave it like that as kind of raw looking. But I also think because Finland, I think really what's sometimes missing in general definitions of Finnish aesthetics, it's also very close to Russia, and it has some influences from there, and it is more colorful and. It does have that Slavic thing going on. And I think because I grew up in a household, my mom is an artist, she's a painter, and my dad also always did something, wood crafting or something. So I grew up in a very colorful home, and I think that's part of like my personal Finnish background. And I think I've definitely, it shows, like I love colors, but not too much on a one-on-one piece, but I do like use a lot of colors on my pieces.
It comes through, I think it's that comes through on your website, but also on your Instagram account, your love of colors. And you talk about colors in a certain way as well, that I think is, it's, you could see how much it means to you.
Yeah. And it's definitely something, I mean, I admire if I look at the interior design magazine or book, and I see houses and apartments with very minimalistic look and very like kind of that, not always white, but some like muted colors. I admire it. I think it's very calming to me and I love it. But I would never, when I realized I can never live like that myself, even though I kind of want to. And thankfully my family, they have to come along, but they seem to like it too. But yeah, it's just not for me, but I do like it. So I think it's the combination of, and I think also, like I said, I don't have to be just one kind of, there are days that and times in life when you do more quiet work, and there are periods when you do a little bit more expressive, because you also go through some things and put it into art. I think this spring, well, I was planning, it didn't happen now because of the shelter in place. My studio closed in mid-March, and I have clay here. I could do hand building, but I haven't been really doing it. So it's been a long time without doing it. And I had kind of a plan to go through my oldest one leaving the house to college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had planned to do a special mug for her, like doing the photo imprint, it's a new technique that I learned technically already how to do it, but
oh, wow,
able to do it. So yeah, so I think really this spring my art would look different. Well, I can still do it in the fall when hopefully we open. Mm-hmm. But
well, we don't know any of that yet.
Yeah,
it's such a strange time.
Yeah, but it's true. I think this this is a very special time, and that when you are healthy and safe and everything is like well in your family, it's you are privileged, of course, in that way. But you do get different kind of some days you are really thinking, I'm gonna do this and that, new things and try them. But then when you, I think also because you don't get those random connections with people that are so important, and the little conversation at the studio about something, about an artist, and you go and get inspired, you don't get those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you realize how important it is to have those connections. And even if it's tiny events and tiny encounters with people, and someone says something and that sparks your thoughts into something else. And I miss that. I miss that too.
Yeah.
Well, Maya, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Same.
Thank you very much again for taking the time, and I will link to all your endeavors in the show notes.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love this.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Stay safe.
So that's it from me for today. It was so good to catch up with Maya and get some really interesting insights into life as an expat wife, mother, and artist. Even if it was only via Zoom and not in person, but I'm so grateful for all these connections that I'm able to maintain throughout this difficult time, thanks to all the technology. Well, as an expat, I couldn't live without it anyway. Make sure you check out Maya's website and get some inspiration. Her ceramics are absolutely beautiful. Be warned, you'll want to purchase everything. But yeah, enjoy. And when we finished our interview, we carried on talking for a little while, and she let slip that she's working on a cookbook. So watch this space. I cannot wait. That's going to be really good. We all need beautiful things in our lives right now, don't we? Be safe out there. Wear a mask. Take care, and see you next time.